This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 452, August the 3rd, 1980. It's side two of the tape. I want to make a few apologies on this side of the tape before we go any further. We had some mechanical problems last week on KLRB. At the break of the tape, instead of breaking the end of the tape, go fast forward. There was some more space on the tape. I turned it over at the station while we took the break at the end of the 30 minutes and didn't run the first side over to the end. So we ran short at the other end because when I began the second half, there were a few minutes on the tape that weren't correct. The tape was the right length. It actually was much longer than 30 minutes on each side, and I hadn't put it to the end. So hopefully by next week we'll get some of those kinks out of the situation. And also, while I'm apologizing, I did something that I have never done on radio, or I don't think I have, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I should be getting corrections from you, and I want to bring it up before we go back to John Tower and Billy Lovelady and possible connections to Oswald and the Book Depository. Just before I went on the air last week, somebody called and told me about Mr. Morgenthau passing away in New York City, and they were under the impression that the Morgenthau that passed away was the one who had prosecuted or arrested Turpel and Corcola December 22nd, 1979 in New York City that caused this arrest. And I put that on the air, and I very seldom, if ever, do a tape or a radio broadcast without the article or the source directly in front of me. I've received information such as the Gemstone file from Bruce Roberts and other unpublished documents, the Torbett document, and so forth, years and years before I put one sentence of it on the air or have mentioned it at all. I've researched it out. And the information that I got on the call was in error. It was Hans Morgenthau who died. He's a political scientist and a former Defense Department consultant, worked at MIT, Yale, Princeton, Harvard, Columbia University, University of Chicago, and was active for the study of American foreign and military policy out of Chicago Center there. That was the Hans Morgenthau that died. It was not Robert Morgenthau, the U.S. attorney in New York City. I put on the printed sheet Robert Morgenthau, and I even spelled it wrong on the printed sheet, a typographical error. I knew the spelling. But I didn't have the articles in front of me when somebody told me about this death, and it's not the same Morgenthau. But I do think that the position of arresting Turpel and Corcoran and forcing Samuel Cummings to come to the United States and then linking Billy Carter to the worldwide assassination teams from the Central Intelligence Agency might turn out to be a little unhealthy for Robert Morgenthau as well. I think that's a little dangerous to arrest these people, but the other alternative is they get off anyway. Well, just briefly, I don't want to dwell on the point too long, but Billy Lovelady was a very controversial person. There's pictures of him in the House Select Committee hearings and the original Warren Report, and the new investigation, this 1977-78 investigation of the assassination of John Kennedy, said, this is volume 12, page 292, due to the blurred quality of the enlargement of the spectator's image in the Algernon's photograph of Billy Nolan Lovelady standing in front of the Texas School Book Depository, it was not possible either to identify or to exclude positively that it was Lovelady or Oswald standing at the door. Based on a subjective assessment of the facial features of the spectator, it was determined that the man in the doorway bears a stronger resemblance to Lovelady than to Oswald, thus assuming it is either Oswald or Lovelady and not a third party, it appears highly improbable that the spectator is Oswald and highly probable that he is Lovelady. So that at the time that John Kennedy was assassinated, there was a man sitting at the doorway, not sitting, standing at the doorway, who was photographed, who so closely resembled Lee Harvey Oswald that the new investigative committee couldn't determine to identify, to exclude the fact that it could be Oswald, but it probably was Lovelady. Well, they have pictures of the clothing that Lee Harvey Oswald wore when he was arrested, and the clothing that Lovelady had, and it's very controversial, touchy subject whether or not Lee Harvey Oswald was in the book depository. He certainly wasn't on the sixth floor, and he says he was on the second floor having a Coke. But only somebody close to the assassination teams could create a duplicate, a double, so much like Lee Harvey Oswald that years later they couldn't figure out which one it was. And, of course, Billy Lovelady was never called to the House Select Committee investigating the assassination, nor to the Warren Commission. He died in seclusion. There was an article coming out of Dallas, Texas, that he lived in Denver, Colorado, and on January 19, 1978, he died in seclusion. The article says, Oswald look-alike dies in seclusion. Billy Nolan Lovelady, 41, worked with Lee Harvey Oswald in the Texas School Book Depository. It was definitely Lovelady in the doorway, according to the Warren Commission, so with little supportive evidence that was ever offered. This led conspiracy theorists to assert it was Oswald in the window. Now that Lovelady died, according to his attorney in Colorado, he would not reveal specifically where Lovelady died, and he hoped that this would forestall any further inquiries. There was no reason to doubt that he died of natural causes. There's been constant pressure on him. He died at the age of 41, and according to his doctor, this is going to kick up a lot of conspiracies, a lot of theories, and his wife of 15 years said he is not going to be harassed anymore. He was under stress, according to the doctor and his wife. He had a lot of stress. He paid for it dearly. He was in the trucking business in Colorado, and as I say, there was no autopsy. Oh, they said natural causes were presumed. Now, so Billy Lovelady died, like George de Morenschild and other primary witnesses, when the House Select Committee was doing their investigation. He was never called by the Warren Commission. He was never allowed to appear before the House Select Committee years later. And the interesting thing is that unusual name and the fact that he didn't testify, and that a woman by the name of Lovelady worked for Senator John Tower, who was suspected of assisting Lee and Marina Oswald to come to this country, with Lovelady never testifying and with his quick demise at a time where he could be useful to solving the question of Oswald doubles, the secretary to John Tower with this unusual name. And now John Tower's wife is the sister of Samuel Cummings, the Philadelphia mainline link of the intelligence community to the assassination teams and the procurer of weapons. It certainly makes an interesting story to ponder about. There were other Texans involved in the assassination of John Kennedy, of course, besides the Philadelphia connections. Way back in 1979, tape 396, I talked about Fred Korth, former secretary of the Navy from Fort Worth, Texas, and his role with General Dynamics and with Edwin Ekdahl, the attorney for Edwin Ekdahl, Lee Harvey Oswald's stepfather. He was married to Marguerite Oswald. Mr. Ekdahl was, and Fred Korth was their attorney. It would be very easy to get photographs of Lee Harvey Oswald when he was younger and in the Marines and in the State Department and service and so forth, and create these many doubles, which I have outlined, and hopefully we'll get a book out this year, try to complete, on the Oswald doubles. It would be very easy with people like the Secretary of Navy having access to this information and knowing Oswald and being able to put these look-alikes in these strategic places, not only to confuse us later, but to also be able to pick up possibly shells or sounds or information at Dealey Plaza and give information to the assassins to assist with their getaway. We still don't know how Billy Lovelady got off the premises without being suspected of being Lee Harvey Oswald at the time. There's an excellent book out about espionage and many of the things I referred to called Spooks. You can order them from Tom Davis at Research. If you have any question about his location now, he has left Nevada and he is living down in Aptos, Capitola. He's moved back to home base, and we'll be sending his books out from there. He has the paperback of Spooks, if you don't have it, or other books on the conspiracies. This book is by a man, Hogan, who writes wonderful articles for the New York Times. and other, he's a journalist who writes in magazines and has done some fantastic articles. In this book, the chapters, somebody reminded me of these various chapters, and I do have the book on Mitchell Werbel, on Howard Hughes, on the Paladins and the weapons, the saboteurs, the Kennedy Monroe tapes, the use of blackmail for political gossip and holding politicians the way Adolf Hitler did, or Lyndon Johnson, the whorehouse tricker, John Mitchell and Richard Nixon, fix them up with the women and then flash the pictures and you control them forever. This book is about B.R. Fox Company, that's the Philadelphia weapons that connects down to Mitchell Werbel in Florida, and Bernie Cornfield and Bobby Vesco, and many of the things I'm talking about, the murder of Bobby Hall I've done tapes on, and Howard Hughes and the Vesco connections, and Robert Nahew and his assassination teams, and Intertel, ITT, and Mr. Bain. It's a very, very good book, and all the subjects I mentioned there are covered each in a separate chapter. The biggest problem with many of these books, or continuously with the articles, is that all the information is proper and valuable, but I'm waiting for it to be applied to the particular assassinations in this country. That seems to be the thing that the journalists are not allowed to talk about. Jack Anderson is going to talk about the ITT and cause trouble for them. He can talk about the FBI and their attack on the Bureau of Indian Affairs or their COINTEL program. Hogan can write about Mitchell Werbel, but he cannot talk about the silencers in Dealey Plaza, even though the House Select Committee Chairman Blakey, who's really a cover-up artist, brings out the fact that there was more than one gunman that killed John Kennedy. The Mitchell Werbel silencers cannot be applied to Robert Kennedy, Thane Caesar, shooting from behind with a silencer and blaming Sirhan Sirhan, who stood in front of him, or Dealey Plaza, many shells and signs of bullets, more bullets in John Kennedy's body than either the Warren Commission or the House Select Committee would allow us to know. They don't apply the silencers to that. They don't apply the B.R. Fox Company to political assassinations and coups around the world. They have a chapter, The World of Bobby Vesco, but there were articles out a while back, and I have them in my possession, about the possibility that Vesco hired Mr. Youngblood, who shot the fatal headshot of Martin Luther King. James Earl Ray was blamed for that. They said he stood in the Lorraine Motel and put the weapon against the windowsill. There was a shot, and somebody ran away from down below in the crowd where the policemen were. There's a suggestion that Martin Luther King's fatal bullet came from that direction, and articles that Vesco was the middleman who hired the assassin for Martin Luther King. Hogan can write, I guess that's how you pronounce his name, it's H-O-U-G-A-N, can write about Bobby Vesco, and you can write about money changing hands and the finagling of stock exchange to millions of dollars or mob killings, but we are not sophisticated or calm enough to discuss the killings of the inner team of each other, whether it's William Harvey or Sheffield Edwards or the mob figures, Sam Giacano or Carlos Prieto Siqueiros or George de Morenschild or Bobby Hall. We're not able to discuss the police involvement in these killings or the actual agents. There are chapters of them in books, and their expertise at everything except the killing. And it's the killing part that's left out, and yet the bodies are all over the place. Evelyn Knight from the State Department said the State Department is nothing but a bunch of corpses, dead corpses, and she suggested there were bodies all over the place of people murdered. And it was in Time magazine, not in the Village Voice or the LA Free Press, Evelyn Knight of the State Department. And nobody bothers to say, well, who? Tell us who was murdered. Why did you say it? She simply says the State Department leads a path of corpses around. So the book on Bobby Hall is good. The chapter on Robert Mayhew is valuable. His origins and his link to Richard Nixon and the war against Aristotle Onassis. But Robert Mayhew's expertise was the assassination team he set up. And that's the part that's left out of these books. They're not bad books. They're good books. but the part left out are the connecting links of these chapters to the assassinations. The assassination critics of the original Warren Commission hearings became what you call theorists. A theory is only a theory until it's proven to be a fact, but the best minds and researchers refused to put their energy into the facts linking the killer teams such as Corcola and Turple and Cummings to the assassinations. There's a chapter in that book on Mr. Bain and ITT and the multinationals and Aramco and so forth and their struggles. Well, there are articles and hints and suggestions of the ITT role in killing Salvador Allende, but it is very rare to pinpoint corporations to the murder of heads of states, and these books only get to the edge of the assassination and do not use their full energy to pinpoint who is doing the killing and, furthermore, how they're getting away with it all the time. There isn't a single book out on the murder of Nelson Rockefeller or the possibility even that he was murdered, the role of Poinsettia Pierce, Megan Marshak, David Esikoff, the early cremation, the removal of Rockefeller to make ready for the Reagan candidacy. The Rockefeller people keep quiet. The investigative journalists don't seem interested in the subject. So all the information on how silences are made or who makes them or who sells them isn't as important sometimes as applying it to what is happening all around us. Speaking of assassination weapons, there's a section in the book, The Weapons Merchants, describing Mr. Cummings, the brother-in-law of Senator Tower. This book describes not only Cummings' background in Philadelphia in the main line, and his father was a stockbroker, drafted in 1945, avoided the shooting war in 1948, went to George Washington University, served as a clerk in the CIA during the Korean War. It goes on to say his first innovation was the purchase of large quantities of surplus light arms in Europe to sell on the American market. Cummings knew that the basis for every fine bolt-action sporting rifle is the German Mauser. He also knew that several European countries were overstocked with Mausers. They were the wrong caliber for NATO standardization and cost money to maintain and store. They even cost money to throw away. Cummings had faith in the United States gun market. There were 50 million American civilians, 24 million registered hunters, and he went on and bought an arsenal full of Mausers, including his arsenal fresh Mausers with Hitler's fingerprints still on them. At the time Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested in the Texas School Book Depository, he was supposed to have had a German Mauser. That was the story that went all over the world. It changed nationality and length and weight and so forth in 24 hours and was an Italian Carcano. But when Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Dallas jail before he was murdered, just 48 hours after the assassination of John Kennedy, he said, well, check out the Mausers in the building. There's German Mausers in the Texas School Book Depository. Well, maybe a man like Billy Lovelady wasn't called as a witness, because coming to work at this Texas School Book Depository, he could have possibly planted Mausers in the building or taken away Mausers later that contributed to some of the confusion at the time of the assassination, and maybe were shot from that building to make it look like Lee Harvey Oswald shot from that building. There was a Mauser taken from there, but Oswald knew there were other Mausers there. It's interesting that Mr. Cummings was preoccupied with Mausers and seemed to bring them to the United States and thought they had some purpose. This arms agent, this Cummings, is, as I say, linked to the Secret Service, to the men such as George Corcola, who have, in quotes, extensive legitimate work for the federal government, for the FBI, for the Secret Service, for Federal Aviation Administration. I asked last week on that quotation, what did they have to do with Dorothy Hunt's plane crash at the time of Watergate, or did they have something to do with it? But it really staggers the imagination to believe that men that are part of a team that is arming for the Central Intelligence Agency, the Middle East, earlier it was Batista's team, but all over Pakistan and Europe, South America, and Central America, these people are selling weapons to what are called the Third World, and I mentioned this before, that are really funded by the Central Intelligence Agency, but they are linked to a assassination team that trains assassins, and at the same time it trains assassins with silencers and various gadgets to commit murder. They do work for the federal government, the Secret Service, the FBI, and so forth. It's no contradiction in protection and assassination. If you think of the killing of Robert Kennedy at the Ambassador Hotel, he was shot by Thane Caesar. Caesar was brought in as a security guard from Lockheed and was moonlighting as a security guard for Robert Kennedy when that second gun went off 1 inch from the back of his head, and Sirhan was blamed and charged with that murder. Sirhan, incidentally, was complaining last week. He had a hearing, and he wants to get paroled, and he was complaining that his teeth are hurting. He said, "I'm fine, except my teeth are driving me crazy." Lawrence Kwong, who was under mind control and went to KGO and shot there and then walked out and shot himself, he killed one man and then killed himself, complained about his teeth, and this Dennis Sweeney that killed Al Lowenstein was complaining about his teeth. And various persons have said that the CIA has done experimentations or put electrodes or little radio machines inside the dental work of the mouth. It seems that many of these programmed assassins who have this blank stare, who can't remember why they did it or what they did it for, no particular political motive, do have a dental problem and pain in their teeth. I don't know if that goes along with being a patsy or not. Oswald didn't live long enough for us to figure this out. But there is this common complaint that their teeth are hurting, and there has been a lot of experimentation about concealing certain kinds of controls in the teeth. I'm going to be doing more on the tapes after I cover the election stories. I'm going back to George de Morenschild, the background of George de Morenschild, his relationship to Lee and Marina Oswald, and the intelligence community of the United States and the Defense Department. I received my copies of the House Select Committee on Assassinations a few months ago, but they are not indexed yet. Sylvia Marr, I understand, is indexing them, and she did the Warren Commission hearings. I hope she doesn't do the similar job that she did before. She left out the important names, the important neo-Nazi, Nazi, fascist, actual German Nazis, fascist names she excluded from her bibliography, and that's another story that I have mentioned to you on these cassettes. She is indexing the House Select Committee hearings, and I was very surprised to learn that from Jan Diaz in Los Angeles that the book, I Am a Patsy, I'm a Patsy, that de Morenschild wrote about Lee Harvey Oswald was in these volumes. That they said, look, they didn't call him as a witness, but they would print what he was saying. Because I spent years cross-filing the Warren Commission hearings and breaking down the adjectives of Lee Harvey Oswald, the good, talented, accomplished person before the assassination, and then the ne'er-do-well, jealous, angry, hostile one that came out from the lips of the very witnesses after John Kennedy was killed. When he was in the service, there were no mishaps. He could learn his Marine manual and memorize it. He could go to electronic school. He could work in the Philippines with the U-2 flights and or in Japan, and he could master the Russian language and get to the Soviet Union and work in a radio factory and then come back to this country and bring a Russian wife and father two children. He wasn't in debt. He was met at New York Harbor by Spaz Rakin of the International Rescue Committee. He had red carpet treatment wherever he went, and people helped him out wherever he went. And he was quite accomplished, wrote intelligent letters and so forth. And then the other version of him as being a jealous, stupid person who wanted to kill both General Walker and John Kennedy, who beat his wife, who couldn't hold a job, the Wanderer, was created by the staff of the Warren Commission. And I broke down the adjectives, both the good and the bad, the documentations of his skills and accomplishments, and then the adjectives to describe the sleazy Oswald that the Warren Commission wanted. And one of the interesting parts of Volume 12, the Warren investigation, not the investigation of the Warren Commission, but the House Select Committee on Assassinations, republished this, it's really just an essay of de Morenschild. And DeMorenshield explains that he really liked Lee Harvey Oswald and that he did the wrong thing when he said that Lee Harvey Oswald was the kind of person the Warren Commission wrote up. He said they coerced him to say it, that you're overawed by the people, that Albert Jenner forced the testimony on him, and that none of it was true, and that he apologized to Lee Harvey Oswald in the grave for the disservice he had done and for the lies he had told. And before DeMorenshield was murdered, he wrote a manuscript on deaths of other witnesses and how people who told the truth were killed, and I guess he knew he was going to die. But he wanted the record straight, and it's a sad story, and it's a story of his being under the control of Alan Dulles and Albert Jenner. Albert Jenner is the attorney for Henry Crown, who has controlling interest in General Dynamics in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It made the F-111s and made approximately, oh, I think I once had on a tape, $300 million profit from the Vietnam War, and the war escalated the day after John Kennedy was assassinated. Jenner was the attorney who questioned DeMorenshield, and he badgered him, he threatened him, and it's quite sad to hear him describe what happened before the commission. And then he would take the evening off and have dinner with Jacqueline Onassis's mother, Jacqueline Kennedy's mother, and he tells how disgusted he was that the Auchinlossers with the Kennedy family wouldn't investigate who killed John Kennedy, and the burden was on private citizens, that they wouldn't have anything to do with it. I've often wondered about Mrs. Kennedy, Jackie Onassis, and her family. He said that they were Republicans, they voted for Nixon, they didn't like John Kennedy, and so that they had feelings against him as the husband of Jacqueline, even at the time that they were husband and wife. DeMorenshield described his life in Dallas briefly with Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina Oswald, and then he went on to say, well, how could I be involved in the assassination? People tried to link me with the assassination, and they were so cruel that I moved to Haiti in April or May of 1963, that I saw the Oswalds one evening. We brought June a present at Easter time when we left, so how could we have any part of the assassination? Volume 12 of the House Select Hearings has, on page 56, a description of George DeMorenshield in Washington, D.C., how he went to New York and Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. in May of 1963, prior to the assassination, and after John Kennedy was killed, he had made another trip to Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia. But he was in the spring of 1963, he was in the Department of Defense in Washington, D.C., and he was talking to the Army Chief of Staff of Intelligence, Dorothy Matlock. Dorothy Matlock testified in September of 1978 that she was Assistant Director of the House Intelligence of the Army until she retired in 1974. She was in charge of human source collection of intelligence and a liaison capacity with the CIA from the Pentagon, and that she was present with interviews of George DeMorenshield in April prior to the killing of John Kennedy. Volume 12 of the hearings refers to Mrs. Matlock, M-A-T-L-A-C-K, testifying about meetings of George DeMorenshield with a Tony Zukowski of the CIA from University of Georgetown University, and they were discussing Haiti and Papa Doc. And George DeMorenshield left Lee and Marina Oswald, the little Tsarist princess and their friend from the Soviet Union that he liked so much, and they go down to Haiti, but they go to the Defense Department first to meet the liaison with the Central Intelligence Agency. Then a Washington Post article came out September 1964, after Kennedy was killed, and just at the month that the Warren Commission was being printed, and it's the story of fighter planes that were supplied for Papa Doc from Dallas, Texas, and how the planes were flown to Haiti illegally, and that boats and weapons were going down to Papa Doc in Haiti, and there were Dallas arms suppliers through Irving Davidson from Washington, D.C., a lobbyist for Haiti in May of 1953. Now, I did a tape or several tapes on Irv Davidson. He's been indicted with Carlos Marcello of the Abscam scandal of working with immigration and trying to get special favors to keep Marcello in this country. Robert Kennedy had him deported for a while, and he worked with the CIA and came back to this country. So that Davidson not only worked with Carlos Marcellus and Clint Murchison, and the hub of the wheel of the assassination teams with Jimmy Hoffa and the Defense Department, but he worked with the CIA and he was down in Haiti with George de Morenschild after de Morenschild left Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina and just prior to the assassination. The role of de Morenschild wasn't to fire a gun in Dealey Plaza. The role of de Morenschild for the intelligence community was to introduce Lee and Marina to people who would create the personality of Lee that was fictitious that the Warren Commission would use. We don't have time to go into this now, and I'll do more on other tapes with you, but maybe the next few weeks we'll go into the personality of the candidates running for office, dissect them for whatever it's worth, the good and bad, and there's plenty of the bad in all of them. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. You take care, and I'll be back with you next week.